And at every step, the humanity of the person who's been colonized is lost, right? It's not only that they are, you know, all of these horrible things, they're uncivilized, they're savage, etc. They don't even get to represent themselves. They don't even get to have their own voice to talk about the nuances of their experiences.
This is Bird Note. How do you get started learning to identify birds? There are so many, and they hardly sit still long enough for you to have a good look. Well, David Sibley, who literally wrote the book on identifying birds, has some advice.
Spend time at home, paging through the field guide, and at first, names like scoter and vireo and egret are going to seem strange and foreign, but by flipping through the pages of the book and looking at the pictures and reading the names, you'll start to get a sense of what those birds are, what makes a vireo a vireo.
From someone who's observed birds with great interest for years, here's a welcome note.
It doesn't have to be about seeing a lot of different species, but more about getting to know the birds that are common in your neighborhood or in your yard. It can be really rewarding at that level. Another thing that I think is incredibly useful for a beginning birder is to get in touch with a local nature center or Audubon chapter. Someone can take away all the uncertainty and say, yes, that's a song sparrow. Your first 25 or 50 species are the hardest ones to learn. So if you can find somebody who can help you with those, you'll have a really good solid start.
We're ready to help too at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Oh, sour dope with High Roller here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Hope you enjoyed that. If you did, I believe we've got a Studio 6 recording session that's going to be uploaded pretty soon featuring sour dope. So check our website for updates, cjsf.ca. Hi, I'm Leslie, and I've been talking about anti-imperialism, kind of. Been talking a lot about theory, and boy, it takes a long time talking about theory, doesn't it? Because it's so complicated, and I talk so slow in general. But you know, like, as a person who's, like, kind of just living through yet another, like, manufactured consent era for the U.S. to invade yet another country in what we call today to be the Middle East. The U.S. and Israel have already terrorized Iran enough, and it is incredibly scary to think about how America is trying to do more. And one of the things that, like, really, you know, I've been talking about how ideas around, I've been talking about how colonialism is justified in racist colonial discourses and, you know, in the West, and how it will sometimes shift and change to be a discussion about liberation. You know, we gotta liberate the people of this country. We gotta liberate women of this country because they're being oppressed by this government that we've put in place because we installed a puppet government in there decades ago, etc. Anyways, another thing that really gets me, that really, like, makes me angry, and, you know, this is why I'm talking about it during Pride Month, I guess, is the way that people will try to justify imperialism and war through the lens of, like, we have to liberate the gays. It makes me, yeah, it's pretty disgusting. I've been seeing this video online. I think maybe it's a person who appeared on Fox News, and she just makes this horrible statement. She's like, the Iranians throw gays off of roofs, off of the buildings of roofs with skyscrapers. And I'm like watching this, and I'm like thinking to myself, like, whoa, how wild. That's incredibly wild, because imagine how many rooftops I would have already been thrown off of if the Iranians, quote unquote, knew that I was gay. Mind you, I know a lot of Iranian people who also, I think, are not shy to the fact that I am queer, and yet I have not been thrown off of a single rooftop yet. I wonder what's going on there. Obviously, that person on Fox News is being a total racist bigot. And it was really horrifying to hear that these words were coming out of the mouth of somebody who was appearing on a conservative news outlet, because I am sure that under most circumstances, she is not going to go out and defend the girls, gays, and theys. I think very strongly that she wouldn't, right? In Jasbir Poor's Terrorist Assemblages, she talks about the concept of homo nationalism, which is short for homonormative nationalism. So the idea kind of comes from the concept of homonormativity, and this is how she goes on to talk about it. I'm not going to summarize it. It's a little bit too complicated for my brain. But on page 38, Jasbir Poor writes, quote, homonormativity has been theorized by Lisa Dugan as the, quote, new neoliberal sexual politics, unquote, that hinges upon the possibility of a demobilized gay constituency and a privatized, depoliticized gay culture anchored in domesticity and consumption. Building on her critique of gay subjects embroiled in a politics that does not contest dominant heteronormative forms, but upholds and sustains them, I'm deploying the term homonationalism to mark arrangements of the U.S. sexual exceptionalism explicitly in relation to the nation, unquote. Poir goes on to write about how the folding of queer people into the fabric of U.S. patriotism and nationalism allows for the U.S. to, one, kind of placate queer people, and two, and by saying, like, you belong here, you are one of us, but also by giving them the excuse to continue to embark on these horrible imperialist projects. And then, so because time, unfortunately, is a flat circle, Jasbir Poir, who was writing this book in the early 2000s, goes on to talk about how there were all these instances of, like, queer groups in America expressing their support for the so-called war on terror and the invasion of Afghanistan, and they're talking about how, like, patriotic they are and loving of the country they are and stuff. She also goes on to talk about how after September 11th, there was this very interesting uptick of people discussing the U.S. as this, like, paragon of progressive modern sexual politics for some reason. And obviously, this is, you know, kind of where that woman who I was complaining about earlier was coming from, right? This horrible idea that the U.S., of all places, needs to liberate brown queer people from straight queer people, and they gotta do it by bombing brown countries. It's horrible. Like, these, I want to make really, really clear, right? Both when I was discussing how people will evoke, like, discussions around women's rights, and therefore we need to colonize this place in order to, quote-unquote, bring them to civilization and whatnot. It's racist. It's just racist. It's just racist and horrible colonial sentiment. You know, and I feel like at a time right now when, like, a lot of that garbage is going to continue to be thrown around, I just want to say, like, me in my position as a woman in the West, me in my position as a queer person in the West, I do not agree with that. I strongly believe that as a woman, as a queer person, I will not be liberated until there is no imperialism and no colonialism in the world anymore. If this episode of Typically Tuesdays is meant to serve any purpose at all, I hope what it does is help you feel seen if you are a person who also holds the same views and values as I do. And also, if you are not a person who holds the same views and values as I do, it makes you reconsider a lot of the garbage that is out there. When people talk about why war is justified, why attacking Iran is justified, why putting a siege on Gaza is justified, and so on and so forth, I want to end today's episode, not that I purposely want to do it, but I thought it was a little bit apt, and I want to share a poem that I wrote last year. This actually, I wrote this poem for my Fun Drive zine, and if you are interested in getting a copy of the Fun Drive zine and also helping out your local community radio station for monetarily, you can get in touch with me at typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. And I technically shouldn't be sharing this piece from my zine, but I was thinking about this a lot. I was thinking about, you know, war and imperialism a lot when I was writing it. I think I was writing it maybe in September or October of last year. And of course, at that time, it had already been about a year since the genocide on Gaza had begun. And I was like listening to the news basically every day, being more and more horrified by the stuff that was happening. But I was really reminded of my upbringing. Because I'll talk about it, but I was really interestingly brought back to these pivotal moments when I was really young. So I'm gonna read this poem now, and it's called "It Starts When You're Young and Then You're Timeless." I'm 4 years old. War is a game on the playground. Gravel dust kicked up by scurried little feet. Spit flies into the air. We make gun sounds. I'm 4 years old. This will be a long one, Mum says, shaking her head clairvoyant. A fiery city, people lost under rubble. Red, white, blue, green beret loads their gun, signs their name on giant metal tins shaken at launch. Villages ablaze. I am 24 years old. The war was a waste of money and time. Well, that one was. Freedom's fighters camp in my neighbor's homes. Decades-long stay, fragmenting people. Decades-long war poisoning the block. Camped all over town. Handsy soldiers never hear no, refusing no, forcing yes, forcing silence. I've heard countless recount the Empire's brutality from across oceans, but from by way of sponsorship, from the stewards of the land, from my people. The sounds of shells falling to the ground echoed like coins clinking into a piggy bank, feeling like security, feeling like civility. For months I sat and watched political pundit after American after Canadian declare, no war justifies children shot in the face, but explosions sound like opening a bank safe, the turning of the wheel, the spinning of the blades, the wailing of the heavy door, the wailing of the sun's mother. No war justifies elders shot in the leg, but lands are destroyed, trees burnt to the ground, to the root, and transcending borders, a colonial construct, is destruction. And transcending still, billions of crisp dollar bills, displacement, a multicultural experience, imperialism, the champion of diversity. Black and brown and indigenous and Asian people centered in the West's missile bullseye. I signed my name on a poem. I signed my name on a postcard. I signed my name on a donation. I signed my name on my fist in the air for equality, democracy, liberation, and justice. Freedom's fighters, you can't give us that. I was 4 years old. I was 24. We are forever. So, like I said, I wrote that poem last year in fall. And 6 months earlier than that, basically anybody who was paying attention to Israel's relentless assaults on Gaza and the West Bank and Syria, Lebanon, Iran, etc., knew basically that a pretty big regional quote-unquote conflict would soon unfold. And I was writing that poem. I found myself reliving memories of my early childhood. You know, in it, I kind of allude to the conversations that my family were having about the so-called war on terror. We would watch the U.S. declare it while we were eating dinner in front of the television. And my parents would, you know, lament about the havoc that it would wreak on civilians and entire nations. I was very young then. I was a little girl. I wouldn't know what the word imperialism meant until many years later. But I'm really grateful to have those memories and to have been raised kind of in that environment. Edward Said talks really extensively in Orientalism about how the concepts of Orientalism, we learn them. You know, it is a systematic and, sorry, it is a systematized form of knowledge. And I feel really grateful to know that even at the time when I was being taught those horrible racist ideas, I also had people in my life who were saying, like, that doesn't make sense, actually. That's really, really bad. That feeds into something really horrible. I also want to take this opportunity to talk to you specifically as a person living in Canada, that the violence that we are witnessing unfolding at the hands of Israel and the US and their allies, they will have subtle but profound impacts in Canada. Of course, Canada being one of the allies of these imperialist, or I guess assaulting countries. Canada is an imperialist power as well. So in Canada, our tax dollars have helped fund the relentless assaults on Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, etc., and now Iran, through spending on military aid. And our elected officials consistently evade calls to sanction Israel and cut diplomatic ties with the state. In Canada as well, voices that support the liberation of Palestine are being systemically silenced and threatened. There have been several cases of this, particularly in like Toronto, but protests as well. In Vancouver, we've seen some people get arrested. And even more subtly, I think, is the rhetoric by which Canada will discuss immigration and refugees and citizenship. I think a bill that we really have to pay attention to in Canada right now is called Bill C-2, and it will have really devastating impacts to people who seek refuge in Canada. It also it has really horrifying implications about privacy and the obtaining of status as well. You can learn more about that actually over at Migrant Rights. Over at the Migrant Rights Network, they have a lot more information on that, and they provide a much better summary. But it's nothing that we haven't seen before. Whenever a country like Canada is talking about something like national security, a lot of the times it is a euphemism for potentially quite racist and immigration law to and programs to go down. And so some of the things that I think that we have to begin to ask also is, who's worthy of the refugee status? Who's the victim of displacement? Who is a potential threat to national security? And who is considered a citizen? And so on and so on. As I end today's program, I think I want to specifically talk to you if you're a woman, and you if you're a queer. And just in general, I guess, I'll talk to you. I think it's really important to learn to become an anti-imperialist right now, because things are not going to get easier and better. And we, in fact, have a lot more in common with people who are colonized than we have in common with any of the politicians that run our governments in the US or in Canada or anywhere. Those are not the people who will protect you Those are not the people who will liberate you. What will truly liberate you or begin the path, like begin to pave the path of your liberation, is when you begin to recognize the shared humanity that you have with other people, particularly other people who are living under the whims of the state, whatever powerful countries want to do, however they want to exploit the land, however they want to raise their flags and expand their borders and such. I'm an anti-imperialist. I have been one since I was a little girl, and I will be one when I'm an old woman. If you are unsure about becoming one yourself, I want you to ask if you can stand watching thousands of people lose their homes, their loved ones, at the hands of horrible, powerful, stupid tyrants who treat anyone who doesn't kiss their feet as though they're ants to be squashed. Do not be afraid to educate yourself about imperialism and its intersections with race, class, gender, sexual orientation, and how to resist against it. And do not be afraid to stand up against injustice and war. Anti-imperialists were made up of millions. We have been here since wars have started. We will be here so long as injustice continues. I assure you, you will not be alone. That was a heavy one. It's been a heavy week here on Typically Tuesdays. But I am grateful that you tuned in, and if it wasn't already apparent, you know, free Palestine, and new war on Iran, if it wasn't already apparent. I'm going to close off the show today with one final track. This is a favorite by Dominique Fizamé. I mean, because she's a jazz musician, I put it onto the program, and I just love how, like, dramatic it is. I hope you enjoy it, too. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM, CJSF, and I will talk to you very soon.
Starting from the week of Monday, May 30th, the Student Union Building is open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The sub-building common spaces, along with the bookable spaces, are available for use. Any comments or questions, please go to the Simon Fraser Student Society website at sfss.ca for more information.
Thank you. You're listening to